Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo, working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens lines. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monstrous Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lorne, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction. And you can also watch me play in the Adventurous, Stellar, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about champions.
Now, before we get started, we want to say that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember, the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Now, champions wield their arms and armor in the name of their deity or their cause, and many of them come with divine powers, while others are a bit more secular in their might. Overall, I'd say that the class kind of differs from the fighter in that the champions have a few more defensive tools in their toolbox, while the fighters are a little bit more offensive. Now, from popular culture, if you think about any of your frontline goody-two-shoes kind of characters, you've got an argument that could be made for them being a champion. But for sure, Captain America is a champion. Fight me on this. And maybe Wonder Woman, too. Oh, I also feel like the Jedi and the Sith might have been champions. Yeah, I mean, sure, they got some archetypes in there, you know, like ultimate power and all that stuff. Like, that's probably source or whatever. But, you know, they're still probably a base champion.
I think I agree with all of those. A few others that come to mind are Arthas from the Warcraft series, who was very much a righteous hero until, well, he became an evil thing, an evil paladin-esque thing, or evil champion-esque thing. So now he's a Grave Knight equivalent in Pathfinder. And I think kind of a real-world example, or at least the all the flavor and lore is there, would be like Joan of Arc.
Oh, I love it so much.
She would be, if she had divine mandates from her god and went to fight on behalf of her faith. And I think that's very much exactly what a champion goes out and does.
Growing up, I was very Catholic, and Joan of Arc was always, like, my favorite. I looked up to her so hard. These days, I'm not so much religious, but I still really like any good Joan of Arc analogy. I think it's fantastic. There's a great Warhammer fantasy character based off her, and she's just my favorite. But in Pathfinder, okay, the characters that are champions are often built best to kind of work on the front lines where their defensive abilities can help keep your party standing. That way your DPS can keep DPSing. But they don't have to be frontline defensive types. You can really still build a champion any way you want. You could be a ranged character. You could archetype into spell casting and do that pretty well. You could be a two-handed brawler. Whatever you want to do with it. But Luis, I don't see, there's no way Batman could be a champion. There's no way. I defy you to tell me how Batman could be a champion.
And I think I agree with you. For the most part, Batman has all the combative qualities that a champion has in terms of being able to, like, fight really well and all that stuff. Great. But if I were to apply the Batman test to this, I would cheat a little bit. And who's going to stop me other than maybe Lauren? And say that the Batman test doesn't work here for the champion, but there is a different character from the same universe, the same world, that does work really well. And this is a character named Azrael, who showed up in the comics and so on and so forth. During the Nightfall events, if you've ever heard of Bane in the Batman comics, there's a big point where he breaks Batman's back and Batman's out of commission for a while, so it's up to a lot of other characters to go help defend Gotham. And Azrael is an assassin created by the Order of Saint Dumas, and very much a righteous champion and looks... The word champion fits here really well. It's just a vengeful kind of retributive anti-hero almost that uses their faith to push them forward to go and stop evil. And I think Azrael fits the role of a champion a lot better than Batman would. But I'm sure if I took some time, I could dig up some Batman from one of the other Earths that also had a lot of faith in religious stuff and could be considered a champion. If we want to say that Batman is a champion in some way, we can say Batman is a champion of his very specific tenets. He is there to go out and fight evil, but do so without killing and do so without the use of guns and things like that. He might be a champion of a very specific tenet, and that faith in following his guidelines is what pushes him forward as well. But that's kind of a stretch. Maybe Azrael's a champion in the Batman universe.
Now, let me kind of add something here. Just a little bit of my own two cents. Our listeners listen for our two cents, so I'm going to put it in here. All right? Let me disclaim first, though. I am a Pathfinder fangirl through and through. I love 2nd Edition so much. It's my favorite system. But I think that 5th edition hit the nail on the head with their version of the Paladin. I absolutely love how it doesn't have an alignment restriction. My favorite champion is a character that can't even be made in 2E as it stands right now. Her name was Farrah Brinehart. She was a champion of Umberlee, and she was chaotic neutral. Not chaotic stupid, but the paladin of a vengeful sea goddess who sails the oceans. Instead of I called her a salt guard, you know? And that's all I want to make in Pathfinder. Luis, please make the dev team build some neutral champions for me. I need them. The neutral gods deserve to have champions too, you know? But let's talk about what a champion is in the nitty-gritty of Pathfinder 2nd Edition. You've got your basic stuff like your key ability modifier, but the champion gets a little bit of leeway. Most classes don't. They can pick strength or dexterity. You've got the good hit points, 10 plus your constitution modifier. What else have you got, Luis?
You begin trained in perception, as most anyone does. You're also an expert in fortitude, trained in reflex, and expert in will. You are tough, and your faith emboldens your spirit to allow you to fight off whatever may test your will and resolve.
Surprising absolutely nobody, you are trained in religion, Deus Vult. You also get one skill determined by your choice of deity. So basically, this is actually going to work the other way around. You get one free skill, which will determine your deity, if we're being real. That's kind of how we Pathfinder players are.
For a lot of people, that's right.
Yeah. You also get a number of additional skills equal to 2 plus your intelligence. So, I mean, honestly, you start out with 4 trained skills. That's really not that bad, you know? You're trained in, you know, the weapons, simple, martial, unarmed. You're trained in the armors, whatever you want to be trained in with the armors. Trained in your champion class DC, which will come up every now and then. I'd say more so for the champion than maybe other classes, but it's still not your bread and butter. And you're trained in divine spell attacks and spell DCs.
There's a lot going in just from the get-go. And I think the most of the class is right in the beginning with the champion's code. You have to adhere to a code of conduct, and there are various tenets depending on right now there are 2 tenets, but I'm sure that could possibly expand into more. But there is a specific tenet depending if you want to be a good champion or an evil champion, and then from there you have to choose a cause. So if you are choosing to be a good champion, you might be a paladin, a redeemer, or a liberator, or you might end up being a tyrant, desecrator, or anti-paladin if you're evil, which comes with additional requirements to your code of conduct. And then also you have to specify which deity you're following, which adds even more that you have to follow via their edicts and anathemas. So there's a lot of rules that come into this, and all of those are before you even get any of your other class features.
Luis, as a developer, you have a responsibility to me and all the listeners at home to explain to us why none of those tenants of evil were called the Blackguard.
I think just wanting to associate, or wanting to move Pathfinder away from the associations of other games, like Blackguard is definitely a D&D thing, and we want to have our own thing, so that's why Anti-Paladin was kind of put in place in the first place in first edition. And then from there, you know, expanding that out into the Tyrant and Desecrator, it's just we felt that those words probably fit better for the kind of themes that those specific codes and causes were going for.
Fair enough. I'm satisfied with that. As a champion, you're also going to get a deific weapon. So if your deity's weapon is uncommon, you get access to that. If it's a simple weapon, you can increase the die size on that. So you can wield the thing that your deity likes, and it doesn't have to suck. You're also going to get the bread and butter of your class here. Do not forget to use your champion's reaction. You're going to get either Retributive Strike, Glimpse of Redemption, or Liberating Step if you're one of the good champions. And these are going to let you do a few different things, but they mostly revolve around hitting the person who hit your enemy and maybe mitigating some damage. What are the evil ones? I haven't read them for a while.
The evil ones, Iron Command, Selfish Shield, and Destructive Vengeance, very more so than I think the tenets of good reactions. Those all have some way of defending your allies. The evil ones, they tend to be more vengeful and strike back at your opponents. So Iron Command, you try to force someone to kneel before your rule, and if they refuse, they take damage. With Selfish Shield, you gain resistance to defend yourself against the attack, and you deal extra damage against whoever triggered the attack. And Destructive Vengeance, you take on additional damage, but you use that to embolden you and empower you and fight back against your enemy. So once you have figured out exactly what your reaction does, the next thing that you get are your devotion spells. In first edition, paladins specifically, because that's what the class was, received divine spellcasting and got up to fourth level spells. That is no longer the case. You're no longer a dedicated spellcaster. Instead, you get your devotion spells, which are focus spells. If you are a paladin of the tenant of good, you gain the lay on hands focus spell, or the tenants of evil grants you the touch of corruption spells, which you can either use to heal yourself and your allies or harm your enemies respectively. And from there, you might be able to gain additional spells depending on what feats you take.
At third level, you're going to get something that I think is absolutely critical to the champion. You're going to get a divine ally. You've got three options here. You could take a divine weapon called the Blade Ally, which is really going to let whatever weapon you kind of invest in be a little bit better in some way that you decide it's going to be better. You can get a Shield Ally to make your shield just able to tank a little bit more damage before it gets all busted. And you can get a Steed Ally, so you can be your prototypical knight in shining armor atop your valiant and noble mount.
And the Divine Ally is available for any tenant, so either evil or good champions. You might have different... there might be some tweaks on what you have available for you if you are an evil champion, but otherwise you're picking some kind of ally at third level. And then from there, at ninth level, you have your Divine Smite, which adds an extra little bit of oomph to your champion reaction, so you might deal extra damage, or you might prevent further damage, or, you know, it varies from cause to cause, but there's an extra little bit on each of your reactions there.
Let me interject real quick with one thing. Mm-hmm. What separates, say, the champion from the fighter is how defensive they're capable of being. That's why at 7th level, the champion is going to go to expert with all of the armors that they're proficient in. It takes the fighter level 11 to get to expert with that.
Yeah, and as we'll see, they eventually outclass everyone in terms of their armor proficiencies.
Luis, I don't know if I've ever read what the Paladin gets at 11th level. Please explain to me what Exalt is.
All right. Exalt is another extra bit of oomph for your champion reactions. If you are following the tenets of good, it gives you some extra ways to affect your allies with your reaction. So, for example, the Paladin's Retributive Strike allows your allies to also, within reach, try to strike the target in addition to you striking the target in retribution. But for the tenets of evil, it just does even worse things for your enemies. For example, the Tyrant's Iron Commands, each enemy within 15 feet of you other than that triggering creature must also drop prone or take damage, so they must also kneel before you. And it just gives even more power to your reactions, and then your reactions become just all the scarier or all the more helpful.
Gosh, this sure is a lot that goes into a champion. What on earth would it look like if all of it came together? That's why today, dear listeners, we have another of our favorite things here on Legend Lore. It's two different builds that we have prepared for you to demonstrate how cool and how diverse a champion can be. Luis, why don't you start us off?
So, the champions can go all sorts of ways. The classic champion, I think, is sword and board, get a sword and shield, or some other weapon and shield. And that's great. That's fun. I think it's easy enough to go back to our fighter episode and pick up lots of the basics from the information on the fighter and apply them here. Grab all the cool shield feats when you can. But I'm going to go into a ranged champion this time around. So, again, pick whatever ancestry you want. Pick whatever background you want, but our key ability score is going to be dexterity, because the champion is so kind as to let us choose dexterity instead of strength. And if you can get a first level feat, I recommend grabbing ranged reprisal, which lets you, if you're a paladin, and in my mind I was thinking of a paladin of Aristil, it lets you use your retributive strike with a ranged weapon, so you can strike back at enemies with your bow if you're within close enough range without having to be exactly in melee range. Otherwise, any champion might also make use of the APG level 1 feat Desperate Prayer, which lets you get some focus point back once per day. At second level, I'd say speak with your GM, figure out what kind of monsters you might be fighting. If you're fighting lots of undead, maybe you're gonna go and choose the Shining Oath to take down undead, or if you're gonna be fighting lots of demons and devils and fiends, choose the Fiend Bane Oath. You'll probably find some oath that might be helpful at some point. If not, then you can always choose the Vengeful Oath, which lets you just kind of fight back against people you see doing evil things and just put a stop to them right then and there. Very good for paladins. Paladins are fun. Paladins are good at blowing things up, or we'll say bringing an end to injustice. That's the nicer way to put it. At fourth level, I'd like to take the Mercies, because it lets you help out your allies beyond just healing them. It lets you do things like counteract paralysis, but it's up to you if you want to do that. Fourth level is kind of really up to you as a range champion. Aura of Courage is also okay. Divine Health is also okay. Nothing too exciting at fourth level, unfortunately. And then at sixth level, I'm going to take Smite Evil, which lets me use my divine ally, and in this case being my divine blade, but your divine blade doesn't necessarily have to be a blade, it's just whatever weapon you're fighting with, lets me smite evil and deal extra damage against evil people, and specifically deals good damage, which might also help a lot with weaknesses or fight against resistances. At eighth level, I'm going to take Sense Evil. I am a ranger style kind of champion. I'm going to use this to kind of scout out and detect evil when I can. And finally, at 10th level, I'm going to take the Radiant Blade Spirit to grant me even more additional benefits with my blade ally and let me kind of apply whatever I might need for a particular fight, if I need the Flaming Rune or a particular alignment to take down specific enemies.
I need to make a ranged champion because I don't know if you've noticed, but I really enjoy kind of taking a class and running it in a different direction than, say, what the Iconic would run it as. And that's one of my favorite ways to do it, is a smite with a ranged weapon. But let me ask you this, Louise. Let me ask you. Have I ever presented a build on here that didn't involve some kind of archetype kind of taking over the whole thing?
Yes, but only because we didn't have the APG for a while.
That's fair. Now that we've had the APG, all archetypes from here, baby! I remade, one of my characters from the playtest. If you listeners were listening to some of our No Direction content during the playtest when we did actual plays of, what was that, Doomsday Dawn?
Yes. Yeah.
I remade my first character from that, Gertie Sharpwood. She is a goblin champion this time. This time she's a champion. And her archetype, because I don't know how to live without them, is Marshall. And at first level, she takes Deity's Domain with the Family Domain because she just wants to protect the small circle of people who have come to accept her.
Who's her deity?
I don't know. Whoever I need it to be. Come on. How does this work?
Okay.
Yeah. And so her divine ally is Mount, and that Mount is a pig named Tenderloin. And it was her very first friend. So she rides around on a farm pig. And instead of a sword and a shield, she's going to wield a horse chopper, kind of like it was a lance, you know? And so from champion, she picked up stuff like Deity's Domain and Advanced Deity's Domain to have all of the family spells so she can kind of really benefit her friends and her allies in combat. She's also got the martial stuff, like the basic dedication and the inspired stance, to give those same friends and family a plus one to attacks and against mental saves, like fear and stuff. She's also got a loyal warhouse to make Tenderloin that much more of a boar on the battlefield. An attack of opportunity, because it's fantastic. I went this direction because I don't much care for champion. I never really have. And it's not the mechanics. I don't like the idea of like, I serve this god. I do what they want me to do. I don't like that. I always kind of liked the old idea that instead of serving a god, you serve an ideal or you serve your tenants. And that's the idea behind this character, is she serves her family. She serves the people around her who accepts her. Even if they're not blood, they're still family. And that's kind of the idea behind this champion. And I like it, and I won't let you tell me that it's not fun. Don't even try to, Luis. I won't have it.
I won't. I'm glad you're having fun, and that's really ultimately what matters.
Yeah, but you know what I will have? It's a question from user Project Jayco. Is there a champion out there that isn't action raise shield? I love the class, but I feel like I'm the only one on the map who doesn't have three actions to use if I want to help the party out best.
Well, considering the two builds we just presented, one being mounted and one being ranged, I think, yes, there's a very easy way to do that. It's just, I think, even easier to be funneled into that defensive mindset of using a shield because of the iconic, a lot of the feats, and a lot of the abilities in the class. Just takes a little bit of effort to think, like, maybe if I don't use the shield, what can I do? I'm sure a two-handed champion might be really easy to do, keeping a range between yourself and your allies and the enemies. So not only are you standing between yourself and the enemies, but you're also doing so at a range with something like a Gisarm or a Halberd would be pretty good, I think. There's lots of ways to do it. It just so happens to be that they're very good at blocking with a shield, but personally, I'm of the opinion that fighters are better with shields than champions are, so.
I kind of tend to agree, but there's something that I want you to keep in mind, Project Jayco. You can still be really defensive as a champion without ever picking up a shield, because your champion's reaction when you're the tenants of good, are already defensive and they don't need you to have a shield. With any of them, you can help your ally to take less damage. You don't need to have the dang thing. So you can bring a bow, you can bring a horse chopper, you can bring whatever you want. But I'm going to tell you this too. if you feel like you kind of have to have the shield, or if you just feel like you like the shield, but you're kind of wanting for that extra action, pick up the Bastion archetype at level 2. It gives you a raise a shield as a reaction, you know? So you don't have to spend that action every turn. You just spend your reaction if you're getting hit. Now, I mean, that's not going to leave you a reaction so that you can block with the shield. But hey, at level 8, you can just pick up quick block, and then you can do both without ever having to spend the actions up front.
All right. Our next question is from our patron Dom, who asks, what archetypes go well with a champion, and do you think it's worth taking an archetype like Sentinel or Blessed One, which doesn't really give a champion anything with a dedication, but has flavorful feats down the line?
All right, I'm going to start with the second part. I don't like to ever say that an archetype isn't worth it, because I love them. They are my adopted children. But Sentinel is kind of an archetype which gives a character the defensiveness of a champion, and Blessed One is an archetype that gives a character the divine parts of a champion. They're really kind of just different diet versions of the champion, so I wouldn't really give them to the champion. Even the stuff that you get later on isn't really that different than what the champion will already get. So I don't like to say it, but I would recommend maybe not taking those archetypes. And besides, if you want flavorful feats down the line, you've got almost every other archetype that exists. This is one of my favorite things about second edition, is that there aren't really any classes that don't go well with 99% of the archetypes, right? And champion's no exception. Pick an archetype. It probably works if that's in your character. One of the ones I think would be interesting would be Rogue, because of how well-rounded it would make the character, both in-system and as a character. Think about that. Like, you're beholden to this cause, but you live in... let's say you live in Cheliax, right? But you're following the tenets of good. You might be a champion rogue, and you have to kind of sneak through the shadows to do what is good and right, because that culture isn't all about it, you know? Plus, you could take Beastmaster, which is just fun. Any class can benefit from Beastmaster as long as you can manage the fact that it's gonna take an action to get the most out of it. But even still, with Beastmaster, it's like at level 4, where your animal companion gets a free action all on its own, right? I think any of those are gonna be fun. Anything else you can come up with is fun. Just, you know, just anything that makes the class feel like less of a stereotype, I'm going to give the thumbs up to.
I am very much in agreement with all of that. I think the 2E archetypes, not the class archetypes, but the other archetypes that show up in the APG and beyond, are very good at fulfilling a specific type of role or specific type of fantasy. If I wanted to, my archer build, I probably could have gone into the archer archetype or the eldritch archer archetype and gotten a lot out of it. You probably could have done also some good with the cavalier archetype for your build if you were more about that, and just find an idea of what you want to do, and there's probably an archetype that just supplements that or even improves upon what a base class can do on any of those. So I mean, if I wanted to, I could probably play a kobold paladin of Apsu, the dragon god, and then go into the dragon disciple archetype and be just the living dragon that defends all that is righteous and good, and that'd be pretty fun. So yeah, you'll probably come up with a theme first and then want your archetype to expand on that, and that works really well with the champion, and it turns out it works out really well with most classes out there.
I think that's the joy of second edition, is that you're able to do that. You can just pick your class and you can slot any archetype into it to make exactly the character you have in your head. And that's why I like this edition. I don't know very many other tabletop role-playing games that give you that kind of freedom so concisely. You know? But, next question from patron Azzy. Why does the Redeemer's champion reaction have the enemy choose the effect?
Well, let's look at that reaction really quick. It's called Glimpse of Redemption. It's for your neutral good champions, the Redeemers, and the trigger, like the other good reactions are any enemy damages your ally and both are within 15 feet of you. Your foe hesitates under the weight of sin as visions of redemption play in their mind's eye. The foe must choose one of the following options. They can either leave the ally unharmed, or the ally gains resistance to all damage against the triggering damage equal to 2 plus your level, and then the enemy becomes enfeebled 2 until the end of its next turn. So what this is trying to do via flavor is you're giving that enemy the chance of redemption. This is your chance right now to choose not to strike and not damage my friend, and you know, just stop doing this. You know, you can choose to be good, you can choose to stop this fight, and it's really interesting. I think a lot of enemies are probably not going to do that, because you know, sometimes you're fighting wolves and the wolf probably doesn't understand the concept of redemption, but there's probably a decent chance that you might find a bandit who took up the life just because they had no other choice, and maybe offering their redemption is what they've needed to choose to go somewhere else.
And let's be real, Glimpse of Redemption is 2 bullet points, one being the target is unharmed, the other one being resistant to damage and enfeebled until the end of the next turn. The second bullet point is not weaker than, say, the Retributive Strike or the Liberating Step. It is equal in magnitude. The fact that unharmed is there as a choice is just flavor. Like, the default is probably going to be resistance to damage and enfeebled. And you're not missing out, depending on whichever one the enemy takes. They're both very strong.
And one leads into far greater role-playing opportunities, I feel, if it happens to be chosen. I mean, if the bandit chooses to not attack, suddenly I feel like I would have the next hour after that combat where my players would have to, like, figure out, what do we do with this bandit? How do we help the bandit? What can we do to help him?
But what if the centipede swarm chooses not to attack?
Then that brings up even greater questions than... Oh boy, maybe as the GM I should have just not done that. All right, and our next question here is from user Brian Lane. Brian asks, 2E allows champions to choose either strength or dexterity as their key ability scores, while traditionally paladins were considered to be strength-based. What does an effective dexterity-based champion look like?
Well, Luis, I thought that your range champion was a pretty good example of this. The only other thing I could add to this is to just reiterate that even though Blade Ally doesn't say it has to be a blade or even a melee weapon, that doesn't default to being a bow or a crossbow. You could take something really cool like a javelin and make it returning, or like a hand axe, and you could smite people by throwing an axe at their face. Like, you could do some really neat and interesting things like that. And champions open enough that you could build it that way without taking any penalties.
Yeah, in fact, I just started a new campaign last week, and one of my players chose to be a Paladin of Aristil. Hey, I wonder where I got my idea from. And his character happens to fight with a bastard sword, but also chooses to fight from a range with throwing hammers. So when he does his retributive strike, he can do so from a distance by just chucking a hammer at an enemy. And that seems to be working pretty well, so... He's actually a mix of both strength and dexterity, because you can get some good damage from the strength bonus on a thrown weapon. So there you go. Just easy enough if you want to go into a bow, and I think it becomes even easier after the core rulebook with the APG archetypes to let you get a lot of cool stuff with the archer archetypes or eldritch archer or whatever you want out there. And actually, before we leave here, I have a question for you, Lauren.
Oh my.
I'm wondering, we're just at this point brainstorming. I don't know if there are any plans at all for this kind of thing, but you talked about support for the neutral gods. If we say sometime in the future there were tenets of balance, what do you think those would look like? Because I've been racking my brain for those for a while, and I'm just curious if you had any ideas on that.
I don't necessarily know that it has to be balance. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe true neutral would be balanced, but sure. Say
I think mean, that's just my theoretical name, right? Whatever they end up being called.
Well, they would focus more on their stereotypes. The lawful neutral one would be more like a Judge Dredd or like a Punisher type character. Mm-hmm. Well, not Punisher. Punisher's not. I mean, he doesn't work inside the law. Judge Dredd counts, though. Right? Yes. That counts. You do what the law says. You know, that is your tenet, is to uphold order. Your true neutral one, that's probably balanced. That's like your Switzerland type mindset. Like, I'm not going to get involved. You know, we're going to maintain order. And then your chaotic neutral one is all about freedom, just not being beholden to what they see as extremes. And that's the way I think you have to approach that, is the neutral champion sees good and evil as two sides of the same extremist coin. And you are about finding a better way in life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Those are your tenets. It's almost a tenets of philosophy, you know?
I'm kind of worried that a neutral champion, just like true neutral champion, might end up being seen as like, you're the champion of indifference.
Well, that's why you gotta write the flavor about it well. And you've got to write, you've got to write your iconic for that or whatever. Being like really fiery, you know, being like a firebrand. Like, I'm gonna stand up for what I think is right, and that's not kowtowing to the law. That's not kowtowing to what they tell me is good. I have seen evil. I have seen bad. I have seen the worst that this world is capable of, coming from all kinds of different causes. And I'm not gonna be beholden to that. I'm gonna do the right thing, and I'm gonna protect people who also want to do the right thing. You don't have to be indifferent.
That's interesting. I wonder. I'm sure plenty of people have their own takes. So, hey, if any of you are listening and are interested in doing your own tenets, I think it'd be interesting to see what other people come up with. Or maybe do it for a third party and put it out yourself and let people play with that. It'll be fun.
Luis, have your bosses call me. I'll write the neutral champions for y'all. Okay. I've spent a lot of work on this. I even have a neutral champion archetype from first edition that I wrote, just because I was so frustrated that this has just never been a thing.
All right. Well, I'll see what I can do, but I make no promises.
But, dear listeners, do you now feel like Legend Lore has equipped you to champion the causes of divine righteousness in second edition? Because that's all we have for you today. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection. It's the support of our Patreons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I am Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore, and as always, it's been legendary.